Hey, it's B-Rad, celebrity hairstylist here, your host of the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast, a platform that allows the voices of the beauty industry to empower with the spoken word. Thank you for joining us on today's show. We are currently at over 60,000, thanks to you, and on over 40 plus platform podcasts, including Amazon Music, Audible, and Spotify. Canadian hairstylist Norm Wright, a renowned Canadian hairstylist who is a true artist when it comes to transforming hair into stunning works of art. His decades of experience in the hairstyling industry, Norm has become a trusted name in the Canadian beauty scene. His passion for creativity, dedication to his craft, is unwavering commitment to making people feel their best and make him a most sought after hairstylist and educator. More than just a hairstylist, he's an artist, educator, and community champion. His dedication to bring out the beauty in each person he works with a commitment to pushing the boundaries of hairstyling, make him an exceptional talent in the Canadian beauty industry. Norm continues to leave a lasting impression, one stunning hairstylist at a time. Hairstyle at a time. Hairstylist since 1985 at Taz Hair Company for 22 years, two-time Canadian Colorist of the Year, Contessa's, three-time Canadian Multicultural Hairstylist of the Year, two-time Contessa, one-time Mirror Awards, 2020 Canadian Avant-Garde Hairstylist of the Year, and 2020 NAHA for Texture. So let's welcome Norm Wright to the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast. Well, welcome, Norm, to the show.
And thanks for having me.
Great. Can you tell us, kind of introduce yourself and give us a little bit about your background?
I've been a hairstylist since 1985, always in Toronto. I've been with Taz Hair Company for 22 years. My journey has been one of discovery. I want to see the thing that makes me passionate is finding out what I'm capable of. And the competitive arena has allowed me to really push my own boundaries and maybe realize that it's not only my own boundaries I'm trying to push here, but by taking chances like I do with certain ideas, if I'm lucky, it will help push the craft forward. So I've moved into wardrobe design, kinetic art engineering to try and make my clothing and my hairstyles movable and robotic. I'm just on a journey where I'm trying to see how deep the rabbit hole goes, and it's been a fascinating.
Yeah, and that's amazing, because I think to kind of take the full spectrum of the hairstyling industry, because most people think that when you become a hairstylist, you're just stuck behind the chair in a salon, and that's all you do. Sometimes you kind of have to push boundaries, but I noticed on there that you're a two-time Canadian Colorist of the Year. So what was the transition? Can you share a little bit about your journey kind of from being a colorist moving into being a hairstylist, and what kind of inspired you to become a hairstylist?
Well, I'm still a colorist professionally. What happens in the competitive arena for most colorists who compete is they collaborate with a hairstylist and take dual credit for the shoot. Mm-hmm. And what inevitably happens with two creative people is your visions don't always coincide. So in 2017, I decided, you know, if I'm looking for a specific vision and I'm looking for a specific look, why don't I just try and do it myself? And that was also the moment that I had an opportunity very early on in that aspect of my career to work with one of the Sassoon alumni, Jean-Baptiste Mazella out of France. Mm-hmm. And when I watched him, we did all the preliminary model work at Taz, and I got to watch him cut hair up close. And watching what he did with Afro hair is something that changed my life forever. It was intoxicating hypnosis that made me understand that haircutting is as much strategy and execution as it is passion. And it made me really believe that if I surrendered to what my heart was telling me, that hairstyles for me would become unlimited. I couldn't limit myself with the lack of time I've spent doing it. I just had to trust what my soul and what my heart were telling me and try and bring out the best, not only in the hairstyle, but in myself, and to not be afraid of what society tells us is what a haircut should look like, and maybe approach it more architecturally in nature. And that really opened doors for me.
Exactly. And it's beautiful that you kind of see hair as art and not just a box cut and put into like that sort of thing. So hairstyling is often seen as both like an art and a science. How do you balance creativity and with the technical aspects of work?
Well, I think the most important thing, because for all of us, consumer hair is our bread and butter. I have the utmost respect for it. I think that the biggest mistake some hairstylists make is they automatically label someone conservative when they're sitting in their chair. If you underestimate the person sitting in your chair before you've gotten a chance to know what that person is all about, the reason you don't see more avant-garde applications out there with the likes of Expressions out of Spain, some of the color work John Spanton, formerly with Trevor Sorby, is doing, is because hairstylists automatically think that the person in their chair doesn't meet that criteria. And I think that is, it's unfortunate. I think the worst thing a person can say when you offer them a new concept is no. And, you know, it's bringing the craft forward is it's our responsibility to try new things on people. I've spoken to so many people in the last, let's say, generation, and how reliant we've all become on balayage as part of our consumer arsenal. And while, like I said, I have the utmost respect for it and the challenge of the application and everything, but we shouldn't really base our entire identity on one thing. And it surprises me every day when I look around and that not one client will have the epiphany when they're looking at the people in the chairs beside them that they all look the same. So I take that as a challenge to try and move the needle forward in the entire sector. And I think the most important thing with the work that I'm doing for me is I create the dream and the imagery in my head first. And then I try and determine what is required to make that vision a reality, and not limit myself to a fiber or an idea or conform to a concept that doesn't allow me to push the envelope or rock the boat a little bit. I might not. The work I do is not for the purists out there. And all I'm trying to do is, as you mentioned earlier, is I'm trying to make the art form more visible to people, you know?
Yes, and I think that's what we are. I mean, we are hair artists, and we're in such a creative industry that why not push yourself or push the bounds? And I think a lot of people are kind of afraid or they get challenged. So what are some of the most memorable and challenging moments in your career as a hairstylist?
Well, one of my most memorable moments was in 1985. I was working at a small salon in rural Toronto, where it was me and five girls working at the shop. It was decorated like a cottage. We listened to the Eagles all day. And at the end of each day, we would all go downstairs and tan. Every Friday night, we would get together and watch Miami Vice and have dinner together. It was the best. It was the best upbringing in this field that I could have ever imagined for myself, because it made me very comfortable in my own skin. And when you're trying to improve on a person's appearance, and when they put that trust in your hands, confidence is a very big part of it. Confidence in yourself and being able to believe that you're going to be able to bring the best of, out of every individual that sits in your chair. And I remember a sales rep came into that shop and said, "Hey, everybody, I've got a free ticket to the Canadian Hairstylist of the Year Awards. Does anybody want it?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Sure, I'll take it." And yeah. I looked at the ticket. It said black tie. I owned one white dress shirt. I bought a clip-on bow tie, and I went by myself to these awards. And I saw what I saw on stage changed my game forever. I saw a gentleman by the name of John Paul Holt. He was doing an avant-garde presentation. Mm-hmm. And I swore to myself, and I promised myself at that moment, that at one point in my career, I'm going to become that guy. And 10 years later, I had won the Canadian Colorist title for the second time. And the Contessa group had put together the first team Contessa, compiled of previous winners. And when I was in the green room preparing my model, John Paul Holt walked in, and I got to walk up to him and shake his hand. Wow. And thank him and tell him that the only reason I'm sitting in this room right now is because of you. He was the guy that got me. So that was a pivotal moment in my career because, like I said, I have the utmost respect for consumer hair. I've never been one of those hairstylists that talks about the weather and whether you've got all your Christmas shopping done. I think when you're doing something as personal as what we do, and within the first 5 minutes of a visit, whether you've met the person or not, you have to physically touch them. So you should build a friendship. It shouldn't be based on, you know, a lackadaisical conversation by any means. I think when we're tasked with the responsibility of something as serious as someone's appearance, I think friendship is the basis of trust. And when you want to push the envelope a little bit and you've already established that trust, I think your possibilities with that individual are limitless. And you'll grow as a person. They'll grow as a person. Both of your confidences will grow. And in a perfect world, if we all jump on board, the craft will too.
Exactly. And you're exactly right. Like if we are in our authentic selves and when we do the consultation for the client and you're creating that relationship, because we're creating that image for them. They're the ones that have to walk out in the street with what we've done. And if we create that relationship, know them, know their boundaries, and give them who they authentically are, I think then they're going to embrace that, because people don't realize how much power stylists really have, you know. And when you're creating, and when you're you know, as I say, if you get somebody in who's very conservative, they leave the shop with a green mohawk, you know, that may not be them. So it's really up to us to really know, and like you said, create that relationship, create authenticity within what you're doing, and really connect with that person. They may be in your chair that one time, or they may hopefully be in your chair for several years to come. And with the images and things like that, like your work has been featured everywhere. I see it. I love it. Can you tell us some of your favorite projects or collaborations that you've done?
I have a lot. Like in 2017, when I decided to start cutting hair, like I have three criteria when I create a collection. One, I can never have done before. Two, it has to scare the living crap out of me. Three, I have to pull it off so it looks like I've been doing it my whole life. And so when I decided to jump into the hair cutting ring, when I had this big, giant, magnificent afro in front of me and I was cutting a bite out of it, I was terrified. But I thought to myself, you know what? I owe it to this person. I owe it to myself. I owe it to this craft that has given me so much to try and do the best I possibly can from the heart. And I've always learned with every project and all every aspect of my evolution that if it comes from the heart, it's right. And you, like I think the moment you deviate from your mental picture, you're gonna regret it. And so with each project that I put out into the world, you can witness one layer of the onion coming off and me becoming more confident with myself. You can see the epiphany in each photograph. And in 18 or 2019 when I decided that I was going to start making my own wardrobe too. I had a vision in my head prior to the shoot, prior to choosing the models. I knew what I wanted to do. And I thought, what, and in my experiences with some of the wardrobe people that I had communicated with, I wasn't always, it's just like when you read a book and then you go see the movie. The book is always better than the movie because you're using your own imagination, right? So I decided that I wasn't always, my imaginary criteria weren't always being met because I can't ask another individual to properly see through my eyes. That's a big ask. So I decided that I was going to embark on creating a wardrobe for the first time. And I made everything that I made for that collection from materials I bought in the hardware store.
Wow.
And I won Canadian Avant-Garde Hairstylist of the Year. So I trusted, like, each time I embark on one of these things, it's terrifying. It's 90% failure because you've never done it before.
Yes.
And most people, I think 99.9% of us don't enjoy failure. But if you look at it as learning, each time you fail at something, it gives you a different perspective on what it will take to achieve that goal. And I have made that a very important part of what I do every day, not just in photo shoot scenarios and competitive arenas. I try and do that every single day behind my chair as well. And it your perspective changes and you become a lot more analytical and trust what your intuition is telling you. And that is such an integral ingredient in what we do. It's made me not only a better hairstylist behind the chair and behind the camera, it's made me a better person.
And you always have to push. I think if you're not out of your comfort zone, and it's probably like a cliche, if you get comfortable in your comfort zone, and if you never push that, you never challenge yourself, you never, as I say, like people, one of the fears they have is failure, the fear of failure. So if you're not going to push and you're not going to try and you're not going to use that adrenaline from being scared, always when I do that, even when I do a podcast, I always have that energy inside me. What's going to happen? What, you know, if you have technical issues, whatever. But if you don't push, how are you going to know? Or if you don't talk to people or you don't kind of, and self-talk, I think, has a big part of that too. You kind of have to get yourself ready, mentally prepared, and just do it myself. I competed for 8 years, so I know what it's like. And to say, getting in there and getting into that arena, all eyes are on you. Am I going to fail in front of everybody? Or what's the opposite? Am I going to succeed and raise my bar and raise my level of what I never, like heights I never thought I could go, sort of thing. But for those that are kind of listening that are interested in competition, now you've been a two-time Canadian Colorist of the Year at the Contessas, three-time Canadian Multicultural, which I think the word multicultural kind of scares some people, of the year, two times Contessa, one time the Mirror, the 2020 Canadian Avant-Garde Hairstylist of the Year, and 2020 Naha for Texture. So I think those are some things that kind of, they feel it really daunting, and but would you tell us, like, what are these competitions about and what was your process in getting ready, entering and winning?
You don't, you can't go in with the trophy as the goal. The journey is the goal.
Yeah.
And you, like, I've been doing this for so long that you don't win a trophy every time. That's ridiculous. There are so much talent. Not only in North America, but globally, there are so many people pushing their own envelope and doing so many incredible, wonderful things that you can't expect to win a trophy every time. That's what makes the victory this even sweeter is if you don't put your heart and soul into it, if you don't really try and move your own needle forward, if you're going to stay in your comfort zone. Make what I do is I make outside my comfort zone my comfort zone. And I factor in contingency time for the amount of failure that's going to occur, because it's a mathematical certainty with the stuff I'm doing. It's astronomical how much you do, and don't let it get you down. Like every time you achieve a failure, I'm going to use that English because it is an achievement. When you've pushed yourself to a level you've never been before and you failed, analytically, the way you look through it to get to the other side is a victory, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't happen instantly. When you're competing, remind yourself of this every single time. Don't leave anything on the table. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what the outcome is, trophy or not, if you've created the best work of your life, that's enough. Mm-hmm. And you should celebrate that. Not everybody's going to win all the time. Never go into a competitive circle trying to do what the judges are looking for, because yes, that is the biggest mistake you'll ever make in your life. Do it for your heart. Do it for your soul. Mm-hmm. Do it for yourself. And do it to honor the craft. Meet those criteria, and whatever happens, you're going to strut around like John Travolta in the first five minutes.
Yes. And that's great. I mean, being learning to be comfortable, you know, with being uncomfortable. And I love that you said that look at failure as an achievement, because most of us, a failure can be devastating. But to you, if you put your heart and soul in it, and at least you tried, at least you went for it, at least you got yourself in an uncomfortable zone, and you're putting you there, and to say, even just to get up and try to move forward, it is an achievement. And I think changing that mindset and how you kind of look at things really makes a big difference. And one thing that kind of scares people is multicultural or textured hair. How important is it for every stylist to be able to work with multicultural and textured hair?
It's extremely important. I remember in the early 80s, I was working at the Four Seasons Hotel. Right after I left that salon in Blue West Village. And a woman came in and asked me, "Hi, do you do black hair?" Mm-hmm. And I asked her, I mean, like, do you mean the color black? Like, do we have black? You want black? Like, you want me to paint black color on hair? Mm-hmm. And she's like, "No, do you do this texture?" And I thought, what kind of a world are we living in? Mm-hmm. Where the people that are tasked with making everyone beautiful haven't made this part of what their day-to-day life is. And yes. So, and then if you dig a little deeper, trying to get Afro hair into magazines hasn't always been easy either. But, you know, the black hair population, in my opinion, mm-hmm. are some of the most capable women of doing their own hair on this planet, because it is a weekly accessory in a lot of cases. And from my perspective, those are the kinds of people that you want in your chair, because they're way more exploratory. They will push their own envelopes and have fun, because hair to them, you can it's unlimited. And that's the irony behind that statement is so many people are limiting themselves by not putting that into their arsenal, because it is such a glorious Afro texture. When you cut an angle, you keep that angle. It's awesome.
Yes.
It's enabled me to create 90 degree angles where, but because it's not something that a lot of people are comfortable recommending to people, is why you don't see more of it. But if you really go back in history, check out Pinterest and things like that, some of the most dynamic architectural hairstyles out there in the barbering is done on Afro hair, because it is absolutely magnificent to work with. And when you take the time to include that in your repertoire, you're only going to be a more well-rounded hairstylist. And your chair is going to be a lot fuller. Let's be realistic. Like, people are people all over the globe. And it's our responsibility to be able to have the tools in our bag to make everyone feel beautiful.
Of course. And it shouldn't scare you that, you know, if you're dealing with texture, you're dealing with coily hair, you're dealing with, you know, afro hair, it's still hair. And as artists, we should be able to master. And that could be a challenge for you if you can't even, like, I still work with mannequins. You know, you try new things, you work, even though I've been in the industry for years, it's great to push your creativity. Try it on that or get some friends with that type of hair just to kind of get them, you know, get yourself used to handling it and getting yourself to, again, level up sort of thing. But the beauty industry is constantly evolving. So what kind of trends do you see emerging in hairstyling, and how do you stay up to date with them?
Well, there are a lot of people that have inspired me through the years. And when I look at the color work coming out of Expressions in Spain, I look at the fabrics that people like Michael Polsonelli are using to create the looks that they're creating. I like people that are exploring unconventional. If we just keep going down the same road, like the ironic thing about some hairdressers today is we are paid at least 5 days a week to create change, yet so many of us fear it. We have to open our minds a little bit. If you look at that straw collection that Angelo Seminari did, and it was featured in museums.
Wow.
We really need to hold on to the idealism and the fabric that has made our businesses successful. But we owe it to ourselves and we owe it to our craft to discover what else is possible. And Michael Polsonelli is someone that I have an incredible amount of respect for. Anna Pacito. Equally, like both of those trailblazing artists are doing things out of the ordinary that make you question what is possible. And I think that is a vital criteria in today's hairstyling society if we're going to move forward.
Exactly. And to see their work is incredible. And it kind of scares you or challenges you. That's kind of what you should, you know, you should not to aspire to be like somebody else, but just aspire to be your own authentic self. And yeah, who knows what's inside your brain? Like you said, you created, you know, the color, the cut, the wardrobe with everything kind of to bring that into fruition, it takes a lot, but we always have to start somewhere. But so how do you approach kind of working with clients and create a hairstylist that suits their unique personality and lifestyle?
I think you instinctually, you develop a gift for it. And because I haven't met a hairstylist in my life that doesn't automatically, the moment someone sits in their chair, they have a preconceived idea of what the direction they think that the visit is going to go in.
Yes.
And I also believe that energy is a huge part of it. I really do believe in life that you attract what you project. So the energy that you send out is the energy that you're going to receive in your chair. So if you are structured and very compliant, that's what you're going to get. And that's great, right?
Yeah.
If you try and get a number of different mindsets into your salons, you ultimately are giving yourself an opportunity to try and satisfy every demographic, right? Because it's impossible to make everyone happy because your personalities are going to clash. There's going to be, ideology is different than some people. And just by being your true authentic self, you're going to be able to create your own demographic. And I think that's a key ingredient to really beginning to believe in your own ability.
Exactly. Because I was lucky enough that when I first started and got out of school, I worked at a salon avant-garde, namely, but then exactly the name is what the work we did inside. So even though we'd had a lot of consumer hair, they really pushed us to compete. They really pushed us to create shapes, to create change. We did weekly education. We did all kinds of shows, even for textured and multicultural hair. We trained with JASMA in Toronto, one of the leading ones at that time, to do these type of things. So then that way, when you were behind the chair, you weren't just a hairstylist, next. People came there because we were different, because we did stuff different. And they challenge us all the time. It wasn't good enough just to do a good haircut and send them through and rebook. You had to really listen and create change and use every tool in your arsenal, you know, toolbox. And that's what I think as hairstylists we should do. We're trained to create change. We're in an environment of change and people come to us for change. Then why are we so afraid of it?
Exactly. Like, here's a stat for you. In North America, there are 480,000 hair salons. And just as an exercise, I invite all of you to randomly pick a bunch of them and look at their Instagram profiles and tell me how different they are. We are going down a slippery slope where we really need to decide what we want our individual identities to be. And do we want an individual identity, or do we all want to blend and conform into one identity? Because when I look at a lot of these Instagram profiles, unfortunately, a lot of them look identical. And it, that, to me, is the ripest moment to explore and try something different and step out of your comfort zone for a minute and just see what you, as an individual artist, are capable of, right?
Exactly. And let's say your vibe is your tribe. And maybe if you want to put more offbeat stuff on your social media, but a lot of gurus say, you know, follow, like find someone you like and model what they do. But then again, you're not really being your authentic self. You're just like, if I look at Norm's profile and I'm like, well, Norm has all that, that's what I should put on my profile. But I don't need to imitate your, like Norm's work. I have to create my own. And my own identity and my own authenticity and my own, like, what am I about as a hairstylist? What kind of work do I do? What kind of work do I love? What kind of clients come to me? A lot of people really don't know who their avatar is. Who's that client that comes? Are they females that are 35 that are in a corporate job? Are they teens? Are they, you know, kids? Are they adults? Are they business people? Are they artistic types? Maybe you do all of that, because some hairstylists, I believe that they can do everyone. But as I say, like, as far as that, you should be able to do everyone as far as texture and hair types and things like that. But I think you really have to zone in on like who you are authentically and how you can best use those talents to serve the people in your chair sort of thing. And in education is very important. So education and mentorship are like important aspects of your career. Can you share some insights into the role of a mentor and educator in the hairstyling field?
I think the importance lies in making the first criteria for me is making, when I find someone that is of promise, in my opinion, I try and get them to establish self-confidence first. The minute they start, because this is so second nature for all of us that have been in the game for a long time. But for people, if you remember how it was like you were dancing with two left feet the first time you did a shampoo, these people that are coming into our business now are feeling that vulnerable, and we need to nurture them and not pressure them into, you know, putting them in a cutout where they have to do this, this, and this. Help them understand that 50% of what you're about to learn is technique, and the other 50 is from your heart, man. Like, that's what, if you do our job without passion, it shows, it's visible, right? And I think, if we are going to try and breed in a generation that we are going to be comfortable leaving this field with, We have to give them the passion that we have for this job. And that is the most important number one criteria. And because ability and application and technique is easy compared to the thirst for knowledge and the thirst to make a difference and the thirst to create a legacy for yourself. All of these things, this is a very rare field because our field offers all those things to the people that want to go out and get it, right?
Exactly. And I can see you really light up when you talk about passion. So passion, I can see it in your face. There's little micro movements, but you can tell that that's something that's really important to you is the passion and going deep and expressing yourself and challenging yourself. So what advice would you give to like aspiring hairstylists just starting? So somebody who hasn't been in, somebody's maybe thinking about going into it. What's the top one that if they're going to decide to go in this career, what's the one top thing they should focus on?
The top thing they should focus on is no matter how long you're in this game, you will never know everything. So education and growth has to be constant and it's key. So find the people out there on social media that inspire you and that look at the imagery that inspires you and find out who did that. Follow them. Find out who they follow and follow them too. Because it's a labyrinth of possibility that will open up for you where you will start to realize and witness your own evolution and what you were passionate about and how it turns off and grows into something much more vast than you could ever imagine. And to me, that's where I am right now. Like I'm at a point where when I'm considering robotics and hairstyles, I'm either insane or I really need a vacation. But I have a lot of fun doing it.
Right? Yeah, because I think a lot of people don't know about robotics. Is that something you would like to share with our audience? What is robotics? How do you use it? Has it been a game changer for you?
It's a game changer because something as daunting as the task I underwent to do the kinetic presentation at the Contessas last year was I wanted to show people something different. And one of my major influences, especially in the wardrobe aspects of what I do, is Iris van Herpen. And she collaborates with engineers and computer programmer people that are utilizing things like kinetic engineering, robotics, to make her outfits move. And she did a collection, and she collaborated with this kinetic wind sculptor out of Washington. His name's Anthony Howe. And I saw his wind sculptures and I was hypnotized by them. And I thought, those are 40 feet tall. And wouldn't it be cool if I could turn this into a workable hairstyle? And I took welding lessons and I convinced a machine shop in Burlington during COVID to let me go in on Sundays, and I cut and formed 2,000 pieces of steel. I still haven't finished the piece because the complexity of the engineering of the movement of this thing is, I want it to work perfectly before I send it out into the world. But it opened a labyrinth for me where I thought, hey, like when I started learning about what Iris van Herpen was doing, a lot of the textiles and the fabrics that she worked with are 3D printed. So a couple of years ago at Christmas time, I bought myself one and I thought, what's the worst that can happen? Right.
Yep.
So it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Trying to create a wearable fabric for people based on a sound wave that you pulse through a drawing on your computer. It's complete madness. And now the work I'm doing now is all Jurassic vertebrae and things like that. It's okay. Just, I want to push the envelope to the degree that I feel like I left nothing on the table. And I think our craft deserves at least that from me for what it's given me. And I think if I have the ability through things like this that aren't consumer feasible, but maybe will make someone try something a little different if it inspires them for 1 second, well, my job's done. You know what I mean? Like I do this to honor my craft. I do to move the needle forward, and I do it to make me a better version of myself.
Exactly. And I'm already getting inspired listening, because I can imagine it on the screen, seeing everything moving, everything flowing, and what's in your head now is there, so you can visually see it and that sort of thing as well. But how can professionals now, like with you're such a positive force, how can professionals infuse positivity into the beauty industry?
You know, making someone feel better about the way they look is probably the greatest responsibility I could have ever asked for. And do your day-to-day job with the belief that when you make one human being feel beautiful, and they leave and go home to their family feeling beautiful, that energy is infectious, and it's going to make people around her feel beautiful. And if we take that responsibility that seriously, imagine what we can do as a collective. Use your chair as a vehicle to share good. Always make people feel 100%. Let's not talk about the negative. Don't talk about politics. Don't talk about COVID. Don't talk about
gossip. No.
Do yourself and your constituents a favor. And let's make our main priority, our mandate, is to make the world beautiful. Imagine what we can be capable of. We are the one sector on earth that, as a collective, we touch everybody, and we can share that information through social media. If we urged each person that sat in our chair to try something new that'll make them feel better about themselves, imagine if we could get 7 billion people to do that. What we would be capable of. See, I think we as an industry really do have the power to affect change, and we should maybe take ourselves and that responsibility a little bit more seriously. Not that I'm saying anyone doesn't, but it really is an honor to do what we do. And if we all work together, regardless of the umbrellas we reside under, we really have the power to do anything.
Exactly. And with our field, we're one of the few that are paid to actually touch people, but we're also people that create relationships with others. It's not just transactional, where they just buy, hand you the money, tap your card, get your product, and away you leave. They actually have an experience, you know, while they're with us. And they also have a journey, because we're one of the few industries where we'll take them from maybe a young kid, then they go to high school, then they get married, then they have their own kids, then they have, you know, the whole journey, and then we do their kids. So we're with them for years and years and years a lot of times. And two, if you can inspire that, and that's what people really come for. It's not always technique. It's the experience and the feeling that they get. And if they have a positive, wonderful feeling that they're, you know, seen, acknowledged, and heard, then obviously they're going to want to come back. And with creating that kind of feeling with your client and say, I'm really about you, I've been thinking about what we can do or how this would make your life easier, or, you know, having really the conversations and not about the weather and not about, you know, just general stuff, that you're actually interested and you're actually recommending, you know, things that would be good for them. And yourself, you're also really creative. So what are some key points that keep you always inspired?
Always be on the lookout for the new thing. Like, and not just in our field. Like, look around and try and see the beauty in everything. Like, I get inspired in so many different directions. And even if sometimes a geometric shape will catch my eye. You'll see in the next coming weeks what I'm up to.
Okay.
And I'm doing very graphic, very dramatically simplistic things that will really tug at what people believe a 57-year-old hairdresser can do. But for me, I really believe that if you organically look at what I'm doing, whether you agree with it or not, I think if the one thing you get from it is that, if that guy can do that, maybe I can try something different too. That is enough, right?
That sounds so amazing. I mean, I've seen your work already, and it's already incredible. You know what I
Thank
mean?
you.
So something that's even going to push that. And I think too, it's more for you too. How much, how far, I think in your head, it's how far can I push myself? How far? And then even if you hit a wall, you're going to climb that wall and and go right over top and push yourself even more, or you're going to bang that wall until you make a hole in it. So there's some
Well,
kind of,
I think the important thing
breakthrough.
with things like this is to create a mantra for yourself. And my wife Jennifer will tell you that with what I embarked with on last year, it was so difficult and it was so daunting and there was so much failure. I woke up every day and I just said to my out loud, I keep moving forward. Even if it's one step, if I do one thing for this project today, I'm moving forward, right? And with the complexity of what I'm doing now, I keep saying to myself, the only way out is through. The only way out is through. Like, say these things out loud. It's embedded in our memory if we're doing it subconsciously, but if you say it out loud, your brain can hear it out loud, even if you're not speaking, right? So,
Exactly.
when we were talking about failure before, I don't ever give up until I've succeeded. I think that's an important component too. Like, you don't have to duplicate somebody else's idea identically in order for it to be a success. Put your stink on it and make it your own and make it as long as you're proud of it. And I think the only person you should ever compete against is yourself, right? If you look at work you did prior and you think you did better than that last time, then you've succeeded.
Exactly. And that's the biggest thing for a lot of people. They always have that comparison. Like, I have to compare myself to this person, or even in competing, you see other people and the work they did, and you're comparing, or I could have did better than them, or I could. And you're exactly right. Just look in the mirror, see what you can do, and always challenge yourself from there, because I think that's how you ultimately grow, is by seeing where you're at, looking to the future of where you would like to be, and then just kind of keep pushing, even if it's one step at a time, into that, into that gap. So if A is here, C is your finish line, then B is your steps or your action steps. But also too, it's always not just one goal. It's going to, once you achieve that one goal, you're going to keep setting goals, and you're going to keep setting your intentions, and you're going to keep, as I say, you never know, probably in your career, it's probably changed over the years, what direction you thought you were going to go. Then all of a sudden it kind of turned in a different direction. If you're not, as I say, like what things kind of come into your head, or what you see other people doing, or you get inspired by something, or like you said, you see a geometric shape and some new idea pops into your head, what that's from, sort of thing.
Absolutely. Like with each experience, the more you push your own neurons, your expectations of yourself grow with that. And I think after I've completed every project that I've embarked on, at the end of it, I look at my photographer and I say, there's no way we're going to beat this. And every year when it's over and all of a sudden, dang, a new idea pops in and I'm like, oh no. Here we go again. Like when I start reciting mathematics out loud, my wife looks at me and goes, it's starting again, isn't it? Right?
Headplant.
And it's I've always said, there was a quote by U2's guitarist, The Edge, when they were asking him about what his predictions for his own future are. And he said, the most depressing place on earth is the summit of Mount Everest. Because once you've reached the pinnacle, it's all downhill. And what's interesting about the human mind and passion is it's unlimited, right? If you look at your potential as unlimited, and if you really believe that your imagination is unlimited and that you can achieve it, anything in our industry is possible. Anything.
Of course, and that's the same with reaching the peak. If you've done it once, you can do it again and again and again, because you've already now have that process of achieving. So with you, if an idea pops into your head, do you put it aside or do you have to act on it?
Well, my process, I roll it around in my head and I think, what materials would I need in order to achieve this? And I slowly chip away at the shopping list, right? And when I get a bucket of stuff in front of me, I'm like, okay, let's jam and see what comes out. Right.
Yeah.
But the shape and the vision, I do have a solid foundational idea of what the look should be, but it always evolves into something better. It always, once I've taken my perception and made it tangible, I start to believe in it more and think, hey, it would be cool if I even did this. And it grows into what it originally should have been. So, but belief and confidence is a huge part of it.
Exactly. And so, wow, the time is just flying. We're going to wrap up shortly, but beyond hairstyling, you're most likely involved in philanthropic endeavors. Can you tell us some of the causes or projects you're really passionate about?
I've always been in Toronto. There is a group called Loft Community Services that cater to homeless and elderly. And so some of the more marginalized elderly out there that have no family, they do have places to stay. They monitor in, I think, 15 buildings, they monitor 800 seniors. And for the last 16 years, I usually start in around late October or November. I put a notice on the mirrors in the salon asking for a $20 donation. And two of my clients who are interior designers by trade in New York, they come into Toronto to visit family, and they go to these buildings dressed as Santa and an elf, and they get each senior to write a letter to Santa asking for one thing. And the $20 donation buys that one thing. And every year for the last 16 years, the clients at Taz have been able to come up with all 800 presents.
Oh, that's amazing. That's incredible.
Like the person that really molded me as a human being was my grandmother. And when she passed, I was given this opportunity to pay homage to her.
Yeah, that's a great, you know, as I say, if I can get probably where people can reach you and stuff, we'll do that a little bit later. But if they want to be part of it or they want to kind of help or give back in the community, things like that, it's because as you speak, I get a lot of kind of visions and I can see it happening. And as I say, for them too, writing the letter again to Santa, and then you can actually, you know, make that gift or that wish happen for them is just incredible.
You know, when we enter this world, our species talks to us like we're a baby. And when we leave it, they do the same. And there is so much knowledge and wisdom and experience in those people, regardless of what they're going through mentally or physically. They should. The one thing that we should not take away from each other throughout our entire journey on this planet is our dignity. And giving a person that and making them feel remembered for a moment, it's like a $20 donation makes a person feel like $1 billion.
Well, of course. And just to have something and somebody thought of them, and like you say, to be seen, to be heard, to be loved, to be, you know, somebody's connecting with them, it makes a big difference. And there must be people that you connect with. So you must have some favorite people making an impact in the industry. If you would like to shout them out now, you can go ahead. So who are some great people in the industry you think are really doing impactful things?
Well, I think Anna Pacito and Michael Polsinelli for the Davinist community, for the environment, some of the things that they're doing. And it's when coming together with philosophies like that, I think the main ingredient in getting people on board is inspiration. So the two of those people collectively are basically, they can inspire anybody.
Powerhouse.
Their work is truly intoxicating, and they really push the envelope to help themselves realize their potential, but to again honor the craft and move it forward. So those are my two favorites. But you know, I've always been an avid follower of the work Ray Chiavello has done for with his previous work with Aveda, and I think there are so many people out there doing so many wonderful things. I think if we could maybe think about breaking down the barriers of feeling that we have to reside under one umbrella and can't celebrate the causes of another one. Mm-hmm. Imagine what we could do, what we could be capable of if we all work together.
Exactly. Wow. Yeah. so much is, and our time is wrapping up, but I'm like, I just want to ask so much more. But something you mentioned before about social media. So it's become a significant platform for hairstylists to showcase their work. How has it impacted your career? And what advice do you have for others looking to build an online presence?
Well, for me, when I post collection work, it's usually once or twice a year. I don't use social media to build my business. What I try and do is remind people, I do one post a day, none of it is selfies, and it's all about reminding people that there's still beauty on this world. And if we all just took a minute and looked for it, all of our perspectives would change. So I use it as a vehicle to share good. Mm-hmm. I don't post client hair up there. I don't feel the need for that. I've been doing hair long enough that I'm very fortunate to have a following that I'm comfortable with. My mandate is more to remind people that we deserve more from each other.
Exactly. And to inspire, because I see a lot on your Facebook, things like that. You always have quotes. You always have things that inspire people, or maybe to be a catalyst for thought, or, you know, things like that. And I think that's a great thing for the industry that we kind of need, or just anybody reading it. Like, you know, even something that they may be feeling a certain way. And then you get that message saying, I'm so glad I saw this today. Or you're reading my mind, or things like that. But do you have any upcoming projects you would like to share with our audience? Do you have anything coming up, what you're doing that you would like to share? Or you can hang on to it and save it for later.
Well, I've put a team together. The mentor that I was speaking of earlier in the podcast, John Paul Holt, he suddenly passed away in May, and I'm putting together a tribute for him with a group of very talented people. That's going to be showcased on November 12th at the Contessas. And I'm trying to do the craziest work I've ever done, because if anyone on earth has ever deserved the best from me, it's him.
John, That's amazing. I think people are going to love it. People are going to be there. Like, I'm going to make an effort to be there.
I hope you do. I really hope
just to see your just to see your stuff live. I've seen the pictures and I've seen the stuff, but I think to see it live and what you can create and what you can, because I know you're that taskmaster on yourself, that you're going to push yourself so hard that incredible work is going to come out.
Yeah.
Probably stuff you never knew. You're just going to blow everyone away.
Well, I hope to just, I hope to honor a man that deserves to be honored. You know?
Exactly. So as we kind of wrap up, is there any kind of question that I've missed that you would like to say something more to our audience?
Whatever you do, whatever decisions you make, do them from the heart, because if it comes from your heart, it's always right.
That's amazing. So lastly, can you share just a memorable transformation story where you felt that your work made a significant positive impact on someone's life?
There are so many. Like, we are now in a society where if 4 million people get married in the US, 3 million get divorced.
And yes.
So I'm, my demographic, because of how I've, you know, turned old. A lot of my clients are in the divorce phase. So when you see the urgency behind them wanting to feel different about themselves and create a fresh new persona that they can give to the world and hopefully find what they're ultimately looking for. So I'm tasked with that quite regularly. And each time, I think one of the most profound transformations for me, because I'm professionally behind the chair on the colors, because it speaks to the trust that you build with people, is one of my first clients ever, who's still a client, asked me to shave her head when she was going for chemo.
And, wow.
But what I did is I said, you know, we can be humdrum, and or I can grab us a couple of bottles of wine and you can put on some Earth, Wind, and Fire, and I'll come to your house, and we'll mess around a little bit. So, you know, I took it from, you know, probably a 4-inch layer to a pixie to to a mohawk, and we just had a blast with it. We photographed the whole thing, and then, you know, I think especially during those vulnerable times is when our true authenticity is needed the most. And to just to go through the vulnerability with that person, because we're vulnerable, we're vulnerable confronting that with a person that is going through it, because we've never gone through it before, maybe, or whatever. But if you're just your true authentic self and you want to really make a person feel comfortable in this process, is what, which is very important. That to me, like, that is when I really feel honored about the choices that I've made. I still have my first client, and I was on a book Saturday. I think I had 18 clients that day. Everyone was late. People were in the waiting area.
Wow.
I was really in a bad mood, which I never am. And, and so this woman, her name is Avalon. She's the first client I ever had, and she's still my client. I asked her how her day was going, and she said, you know, my husband passed away, and he wanted to die at our country home. And so we all went there and held hands, and they told me about how the shape of his face changed when his soul left his body. And I looked at myself, and I looked at my column, and I realized that the remainder of my day was all people that I had a similar feeling towards. And I had no right to be angry about anything, because what have I done in this chair that I deserve trust of this magnitude from another human being? And it made me realize that what we do is really not only a gift for our clients to make them feel beautiful, but it's a gift for us too. Because when somebody trusts you with that kind of stuff, it's a testament to how you've made them feel too.
Exactly. And it's also a testament to you having the same, like your first client and still have them today, but also to have the ability to take a situation that's devastating for a client and sort of transfuse it or diffuse it, or where they leave feeling great. You know, they may come in, they have this situation going on, but you have that compassion and that connection and that relationship with them that you're not like, you're not just, I'm here for the money and that's it. I don't care about your life. Yeah.
It also made me reanalyze my own perspective. Like, I really had no right to be angry about anything. When you break down the fundamentals, man, I'm playing with women's hair for money. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for me to ever be that arrogant that I would take any of that for granted is something I will never do again, you know?
And that's exactly it, because there's some stylists are on top. They think everything's great, but all that can change in a moment. So you never know it.
You can learn from every rung in the ladder too, my friend. Like, I've learned from shampoo people. The thing about art is, if you compare Da Vinci, Picasso, Michelangelo to Basquiat, they're all fascinating and they're all geniuses, but they're all completely different because they all see through different eyes. So if you challenge yourself to try and look at everybody's perspective before you make judgment, that is when we're going to start moving our needle forward. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's an incredible note to kind of leave on. I don't want to keep you because I like to honor your time, but it's been such an incredible time. So if people want to find you, where can they connect with you? So like on Instagram?
Instagram, I'm ColorDude11, ColorDude11. And I keep my profile private. I don't care about how many people like my stuff. I'm just doing it to send some positivity out into the world without getting hacked.
That's amazing. I know. Or, well, now it's cloned. I think cloned. Right. Cloned and hacked and all that kind of stuff. And, well, I want to say thank you, Norm, for being on the Hairstylist Empowerment Podcast today. So as we wrap up, I've got one more for you. So as we wrap up, what's a nugget of gold you would like to leave our audience?
Leave the world better than you found it.
Amazing. Amazing. So thank you, Norm, for being on
today's
show.
Thank you for the honor, Brad. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm already buzzing, like, talking to you. And, like, I want to talk to Norm so much more. But I don't want to force myself on you. But as I say, I think this is going to be incredible for those listening. I believe they're going to be inspired. They're going to be, you know, as I say, have a transformation happen within themselves, that sort of thing. I want to let everybody know today's episode has been brought to you by Beauty Industry Cruises. So be sure to join Beauty Industry Cruises October 27th to November 1st, 2023, on their Halloween hangout, Leaving Miami. And then 2024, there's the Vacation of the Lifetime in Greece, which is June 2nd to 9th, leaving out of Athens. And they've just added Australia, which is happening January 27th to February 1st, 2024. And those are all going to be great. So make sure you check out the cabin pricing, grab your tickets, check everything out at www.beautyindustrycruises.com. All the cabins are booked through myself. And as we kind of leave you, remember to get up, dress up, show up wonderfully and powerfully, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks, Brad.